Hey, everybody, grab your sun hats and hydrate because today we're talking climate change with a man who knows how to keep it cool. I am pleased to welcome Ethan Brown to the show. Ethan is not your typical environmentalist. He has dual degree in environmental analysis and policy and also film and television. He's written all sorts of impressive articles for publications like the Orange County Register, Newsweek, and The Hill. Again, you could probably debate a polar bear in the moving south. He's that kind of cool. But he's not just facts and figures. He's the host of the Sweaty Penguin podcast. And that's set out to prove the climate change discussion is real. And you don't have to be hotter than a heat wave in July to understand and debate with him. Ethan's found a way to mix comedy with serious issue. So basically sit back, relax, and we're gonna have some good time talking with Ethan Brown. Here we go. Ethan, I am happy you're here on the show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I am excited about this because I want to mix some fun with a serious topic. So let's start out with that. How does humor help in like communicating the seriousness of climate change?
Well, first off, I think we can all say it's hilarious how we're having increasing heat waves and hurricanes. I think that what I've found, I ran both my high school and college satire publications, and there I first had the opportunity to manage some great teams. Our college one grew to 90 people while I was in charge, but I also learned that any annoying topic on campus, whether it be how dry the dining hall chicken was or we use fossil fuel investments, we could actually turn it into something that made people laugh and smile while getting a point across. So I sort of took inspiration from that experience, from some of the late night comedy shows, and put together a podcast that tried to do that with climate change to help make it less overwhelming and less depressing for people.
Yeah, can I just say that the name, the Sweaty Penguin, is like such a perfect, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not an analogy, it's a something, whatever it is. A Sweaty Penguin talks all about climate change.
Well, thank you. My dad thought of the name and he said, I'm free to use it for whatever I want as long as I give him credit every single time someone asks that question. So there you go. Right.
So shout out to dad, that's awesome. So what's the funniest or most surprising misconception you've encountered about climate change?
The funniest might be, I think we've run into several different stories that are funny. One that I think of a lot is we did an episode on succulents a couple years ago, and succulents have a few threats. Certainly climate change is affecting their ecosystems as well as habitat loss, but there's this illegal trade of succulents where people around the world, I guess, have the conception that if they buy a rare succulent, they'll first off have something super cool, but they'll also be saving the succulent from these environmental threats, when in reality, they're taking it out of its natural environment and preventing it from spreading its seeds. So there's all these endangered succulents that get poached and can be sold for up to $1,000 on the black market around the world. And one story we ran into in doing that episode, there was a woman in New Zealand, I believe, who was caught in the airport smuggling 900 plus succulents on her body. She had stockings that she just stuffed all these succulents and seeds into. And that one stands out in my memory as a really funny way that issue played itself out.
So basically she was a succulent mule.
Yeah, it seems that way.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all. Where do you hide these things? So what's some climate change facts or statistics that you think are particularly alarming or concerning?
I think that a lot of us have heard some of the alarming ones. The world has warmed by 1.2 degrees Celsius since pre-industrial times or whatever. It's headed on a trajectory to warm by 1.5 degrees Celsius or really we're on a trajectory to warm by more like 2.6 degrees Celsius if we just stayed with our current policies. But I think what excites me is, on the flip side, in 2015, we were on track to warm by 4 degrees Celsius. Then the Paris Agreement happened. Then a lot of countries started instituting more climate policies. Perhaps one of the biggest things, the cost of solar PV came down by 85% in the last decade, offshore wind by 55%, batteries for electric vehicles by 85%. So those are getting cheaper. Now they are often cheaper than the least expensive fossil fuels they're competing with. So with all of that progress, we've seen our trajectory go from around 4 degrees Celsius to around 2.6 degrees Celsius. Is that enough to curb the worst of climate change? No, but that gets me excited because we're seeing progress. We're on a train that's moving and we just have to hit the gas pedal and move it even faster.
Okay, so I already hear the question in people's minds. It's like, let me get this straight. 1 degree makes a difference. Like, I turn my air conditioner down 1 degree and I'm still sweating. I turn it up, the heater up, doesn't make any difference. How is 1 degree of climate change temperature making a difference in the world?
That's a really great question, and I probably should have led with that. So climate and weather are actually two different things.
Right.
Weather refers to something that happens on the timescale of an hour or a day or maybe a week. Okay. Climate refers to a year, 5 years, 10 years, 100 years. So if we say the climate warms by 1 degree or 2 degrees, what we're really saying is, if you average the temperature from every single day of that time span, that's the change that we see. But it's not just every day gets 1 degree hotter or cooler. We see much hotter hot days, much colder cold days, much more extreme storms and weather events. And we can get into a variety of ways that different events happen for that reason. Okay. But that's really what we're looking at. Climate change doesn't just affect the average, it affects the extremes. And that's where we find concern as it gets warmer.
Gotcha. Is that where like the El Niños come into play and things like this? Or
so El Niño and La Niña is a natural oscillation that happens regardless of climate change. And we're actually currently toward the end of a La Niña event, which is a cooler event. So the last 3 years when you've been hearing different records, that's mm-hmm. in a naturally cooler period. And we're probably going to transition into an El Nino event in the next year or so. So we might start seeing a lot of records getting shattered. And again, that's a natural oscillation. Climate change can push El Nino and La Nina to be a little more extreme, mm-hmm. but that's another thing we want to be mindful of. That said, climate change itself is responsible for a much larger percentage of our change in temperature than, say, this year. If we transition from a La Niña to an El Niño, that's just kind of giving it that extra oomph to break whatever records it might break.
I have to ask about this because way back in the day, actually not so far way back in the day, we used to have like the spray cans with the deodorants with the chlorofluorocarbons. Did I say that right? Yep. And we were making this big hole in the atmosphere because of all of them. I guess we've stopped using that. Has the hole shrunk?
It has, and it's possibly one of the best examples of an international environmental success. There was the Montreal Protocol was passed, I believe, in 1987, but mm-hmm. you might have to fact check me there. And basically the entire world agreed we don't want a hole in the ozone layer. We got to do something about this. It was a little bit easier because these chlorofluorocarbons, hydrofluorocarbons, whatever they wanted to address were not, there weren't entire industries and economies built on them. They were used for some pretty specific things. But that said, we put policies in place and then countries took from that and implemented policies at home in the United States. The Clean Air Act amendments of 1990 addressed this, and we got those chemicals out, and the ozone layer has started to heal as a result.
Yeah.
So It's more challenging with greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and methane, but we know that it's doable. And again, we're seeing progress, and hopefully we can see that progress speed up. But I think that's a great example of how countries can work together to get something done.
I love that, because you don't even hear people talk about it anymore, because it's like, oh, the hole must be gone, so we're good. So that is something pretty cool. Like, so there are people, we know for sure that they are skeptical and they don't believe that there's anything going on with the climate, and that it's just one of those cycles that happens every X hundreds or thousands of years. How do you deal with them? What do you say? And then they say, it's just natural. It's going to happen.
I think it depends on the person and whether or not they actually want to have a conversation. Obviously, there are some people that just want to troll you and have been in those interactions before. And for me, really what I would want to learn in that interaction is, why do they feel the way they feel? Why are they doing this? So I would probably stop trying to convince them and just try to learn where they're coming from and why they're behaving that way, to be honest. Yeah. And that can be useful for me then in communicating in the future. But if someone really wants to sit and have that conversation, which has happened to me before, I remember in I was at college at Boston University. There was a really brutal nor'easter in January of 2019. And I braved the, like, walking across the street to go to the go to the convenience store to get a few snacks, and the cashier there said something like, oh, like, people talk about global warming, but look at this. And I was like, well, actually, the polar vortex has weakened, and that sent very cold air from the Arctic down south to us in Boston, and that's why it's so cold. And he was like, oh, that's interesting. So you don't think the government controls the weather? And I was like, no, they don't. We can create policies to combat climate change. But then he was like Googling, and we had a conversation. And so it's, if someone wants to have the conversation, you can have the conversation. And very often it's just a lack of education. But yeah. I think it comes with being patient. It comes with actually having good answers to the questions, and not just spewing some, like, you want to have done your research. And I've actually done some posts talking about some ways to address different common misconceptions that you can check out. But yeah, I think there's certainly room to have those conversations. And I think it's important to, because often people just didn't have the education on it. It's not so much that they're conspiracy theorists or anything like that.
You just blew me away a second ago when you said there are people that believe that the government controls the weather. That, seriously, you're saying that out loud.
People, yeah, that was what he said. But wow. Again, like, I didn't laugh at him or call him a conspiracy theorist. I was just like, no, they can't really do that. They can create policies that address greenhouse gas emissions, which can help the climate, but day-to-day weather they can't control.
Gotcha. Give me some examples of, like, how climate change is, like, impacting us right now. So people can go like, wow, I didn't know that was because of climate change.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, I think some of the obvious impacts are the way that weather extremes are changing with regard to hurricanes, wildfires, heat waves, natural disasters, all of these things. Climate change can worsen in a variety of ways. It can, in some cases, make them more frequent, but very often it's making them more severe. There's obviously things like sea level rise, where we're seeing glaciers on ice sheets melting and falling into the ocean, which is like just dropping ice cubes in a glass of water. It pulls it up. More so than that, there's thermal expansion, where the ocean water is just getting bigger and taking up more space. Trying to think.
How far could that go, by the way? Like, with the ice melting, the glaciers melting, people go like, oh, so it's going to melt and the seas are going to rise an inch or whatever. That's not going to wipe out New York or Miami or anywhere else. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that sometimes we'll see, first off, it's very possible in the next century that sea levels could rise 10 feet or like it's pretty major what could happen. But even at that small scale where you say, oh, it might rise by 50 centimeters in the next 10 years or something, that's just a number off the top of my head. That's not a actual number. But at that small scale, you do see effects on coastal ecosystems like salt marshes and mangroves, which store a lot of important species. They are actually good protection for our coastal communities, where if a flood comes in and it hits a marsh or it hits a mangrove or hits seagrass, it's not going to intrude as far. And they are also some of the best ecosystems in the world at storing carbon dioxide, even better than most forests. So that even those small changes can threaten those ecosystems. Mm-hmm. But then from there, you think about like what I was saying with weather. It's similar with sea level rise, where we see the average go up, but we also see the extremes get a lot worse. And if there's a little bit more sea level rise and then a hurricane hits, that hurricane has that extra oomph to get a lot further inland. So those are some of the issues at the smaller scale.
Gotcha. So one thing I want to talk about and hit on is environmental justice, because some people look and they go like, we're good. What in the rest of the world talk about environmental justice for people, one, that don't know about it, and what do we do about it?
So the concept of environmental justice or climate justice or what have you is basically the idea that there are certain communities, often low-income communities, often minority communities, that are disproportionately exposed to the impacts of climate change or pollution, but they very often did the least to cause them. Mm-hmm. And we see this play out in almost every issue, to be honest, where there's a story where the people who are getting most affected are not the people who cause the problem. And so I think that to anyone is extremely frustrating and extremely concerning and makes it important to address these issues. And I think sometimes that word has kind of gotten, it turned into a buzzword a little bit, but that core premise, I find that anyone I talk to about that tends to agree this is clearly not fair and we need to do something about that.
Right. What are the things that, I mean, people are recycling now, which is good. We're using some renewable energy now, which is good. One of the things that people watching us, they're going like, what's one more thing I can do right now here today to help with climate? What can I do?
So I'd like to give people five quick things that they can do. Number one, I haven't done this in like a year, so hopefully I remember.
You can make them up because I won't know the ones that you don't make up.
Yeah, I'll just start winging it along the way. Number one would be to do your research. I think a lot of issues have aspects that there's just a lot of nuance to them. So one example I give is with electric vehicles. It is very often more sustainable if you have a pretty fuel efficient vehicle to drive your current vehicle to the end of its life before buying the new electric vehicle, because the impact of actually building a new vehicle is pretty high and you don't want to just junk something that still works perfectly fine. So there's things like that where if you do your research, very often you're saving yourself money and making more sustainable decisions. Okay. Number two would be to just find low-hanging fruit. So often it can be like, turning the lights off when you leave your apartment or things like that, where it's super easy. Again, you're probably saving money and you can also help the environment very quickly. Number three would be to uplift others who do good things. I think a lot about how in the United States, I love eating meat, but there's a lot of people who are vegan and they get a lot of hate online and in pop culture. And my feeling is they're all doing us a big solid by having a more sustainable diet. And so I look up to anyone who makes that choice and try to respect them and encourage them. And I would imagine more people might do it if there weren't a social stigma around it, which there really shouldn't be. So yeah. I think uplifting people who are doing things like that is really helpful and important. Number four is to use your voice. I, for myself, found that was through writing and podcasting. I didn't want to be a advocate per se. I had went to a protest once and just really didn't like, I don't like big crowds. And I also don't like that. I love getting into the nuance and the nitty gritty. So there's just no sign I could create that I would feel comfortable holding up. But for some people that might be going to protests or getting into activism. For some people that might be speaking up in their business or in their home and making decisions for voting is one way you can show your voice. Yes. There's many ways to do it, but that's a good thing to do. And then last and most important to me is to talk to someone you disagree with. And it doesn't have to be about climate. It can literally be about sports or movies or books, but getting comfortable in those conversations is so important because we've gotten as politicized as we have, but when people are talking and when they're finding common ground, we've been able to get a lot done. From 1970 to 1976, there was a Democratic Congress and Republican presidents, Nixon and Ford. And in that divided government, we passed the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, National Environmental Policy Act, Endangered Species Act, established the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, had the first Earth Day. And that's just the top of the list. It goes on. And that happened in a divided government. And there were large bipartisan coalitions around these different things. And I think the reason why is people were talking. It was not long after Rachel Carson's book Silent Spring came out. There were some pretty major, I think there was like a lake or river that was on fire in Ohio or something. There was a lot going on. There was a big oil spill. And so people were talking, people were finding common ground, and people agreed to get stuff done. And I think if we do more of that today, we can find those same successes with climate.
I love that. I didn't realize that all that happened in the 70s, and it was because during the divided, you know, House and the Congress and the President and all that kind of stuff. So that's amazing. I wish we could get back to that. That'd be awesome. Let's do something. I want to play a little game with you, learn some more about you and learn more about climate change. We're going to play a little bit of this or that. And then you get to basically, I'm going to give you two choices of something. You can choose one or the other, but not neither or both. And if you want to justify any of your answers, you can do that too.
All right.
Let's see if we can do this. How about climate change solution, massive reforestation or giant solar farms?
I think both are useful, but I'm going to say solar farms. They're working on different things. The thing with reforestation is you need a lot of land to do it, and new trees don't, they absorb carbon faster than old trees, but they don't have it already stored. Whereas if you protect a old existing forest, they have centuries of carbon stored in their roots and in their soil. And so that's one of the challenges with reforestation. So I'll go with the solar farms.
Okay. How about sustainable diet? Insect protein or lab grown meat? I'm not sure I feel that. I'm not feeling those.
So I think I'll say insect protein. I think that both can exist. Both will probably end up only serving a niche audience. But lab-grown meat still has things that need to be accomplished before it can be widely distributed in the public. And I think they'll do it, but I think insect protein is maybe a little further along. That said, neither of them are going to save the world on their own.
Okay. How about solar power, a house covered in solar panels or sun-tracking solar panels in the yard?
Sorry, what was the second one?
sun tracking solar panels in the yard?
I think that the houses covered in solar panels might be a more widely applicable solution because not every structure has a yard, but certainly whatever works for you is awesome.
Electric car or bike to work?
Personally, I hate driving, so I'll say bike, but again, there's opportunities for both.
I'm just going to work at home or in my office, so that'll work for me. So, let's learn some more about you. Well, about your next vacation, glacier watching in Alaska or coral reef diving in Australia?
Oh.
What would Ethan choose?
Wow. Both of those are like top five on the bucket list. I think I would say if it had to be immediate and someone else was paying for it, I think I'd take the reef because coral reefs are one of the most threatened ecosystems right now. Mm-hmm. They're kind of one of the first that could theoretically go. They are very resilient in their own ways, but I would want to make sure I saw that in time.
Yeah, that I think that would be an amazing vacation. Okay, way to save water, Navy shower or collecting rainwater? I'm not sure if you're familiar with Navy showers.
Yeah. Okay. I think collecting rainwater is a very useful tactic and really can be implemented anywhere. And so I like that one.
You know, on that, I have been blown away that it is illegal in some places to collect rainwater.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Right?
There's a lot of weird laws that just get in the way of stuff. Our episode today was talking about permitting in the U.S. I mentioned the National Environmental Policy Act before. It's done some good things, but it's also held up a lot of clean energy projects for years. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking a little bit about that today.
Oh, man. What about green investment? Tidal energy or wind turbines?
Wind turbines, for sure. I think that wind has already asserted itself as one of the most economically efficient energy sources on the market. Tidal is still very expensive. I'd love to see it develop and improve, but I think wind is something we're already at a place that we can go full steam ahead and it'll actually make energy cheaper for people.
That was good right there. How about future forecasts? Let's just go way out. Maybe it's not way out. Miami underwater or Sahara green and lush? What's going to happen?
I'd be surprised to see a green and lush Sahara. As I understand it, it's drying out even more.
Is it?
Miami is... We can take steps to make it less likely that it were to end up underwater, and maybe parts of the city might become uninhabitable. But at the same time, there are a lot of solutions around climate resilience on the coast. We just did an episode on stilt houses where we talked a lot about Florida as an example. So that one is maybe the more likely of the two, but I think we can stave that off.
Okay. Okay. Personal question for you. Public speaking venues. Would you rather do TED Talk stage or UN Climate Summit?
Ooh. I would love to go to a UN Climate Summit. I applied for an opportunity last year that I did not get. So we'll see if this year pans out. I don't see anything immediately on the horizon, but I think it would be amazing to get the opportunity to attend that conference. It's really the most important climate conference in the world each year.
There you go. Last one. This is an icebreaker at a party. That is a pun. Global warming joke or climate change fun fact?
You said I can't say neither.
What do you have? What's your alternative?
I guess I can make a joke, but not like a... I am a big fan of puns and silly pickup lines, but it's just not going to work. I think the if I were making a climate change joke, it would more be like a self-deprecating joke that references my interest in climate. I don't want to be the party pooper.
Oh my gosh, Ethan, I totally want people to stay in touch with you and be able to get in touch with you and follow you and learn more about climate change. We've got the sweatypenguin.com is your website, and people can get all kinds of stuff there. You've got your podcast, the Sweaty Penguin Podcast, available on Apple and Spotify. And those are two awesome platforms, by the way. Instagram and TikTok at the Sweaty Penguin Pod. And for all you guys that are on Twitter, it's slightly different. Twitter is Sweat Penguin Pod, not sweaty. So leave off the Y if you're on Twitter. And then we've got your Patreon, the Sweaty Penguin. I think that's awesome. Anyone who wants to get more involved, I think that's a perfect way for them to do it right there. So I'm going to leave this on the screen as we pop out of here. It has been amazing talking with you. Thank you so much. And I want to do this again. I like
it. Yes, absolutely. Thanks again for having me, and happy to do it anytime.
All right. All you guys out there, catch you in the future. Bye-bye, everybody.